IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Solution. She is a research associate at the Institute of Global
Oh, is she on the line?
Fund. Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
She's joining us right now.
Madam, sorry.
Sarusha, are you with us?
I'm well. How are you?
Stan Katz, Kathy Kayla, standing in for Gary Bromberg. Yeah, we're good. We're good. Sarusha, can you just explain it to my five-year-old brain? How, well, firstly, how did we go from a DA council in Johannesburg, or DA government in Johannesburg, to ANC to DA, and now we're back to ANC? How does that work? I don't understand how I can vote for one party and, you know, another party comes in.
Yeah, I mean, if your five-year brain is not working, mine is fried. it's the way that the electoral system, not the electoral system, it's the way the political parties have basically, I wouldn't say manipulated, but essentially captured the way in which they want to govern. So you move from a very high level of percentage of votes for the ANC in winning the Gauteng province with a good margin of the electoral vote, then of course it starts to peak and then decline. It starts to lose serious traction in its traditional electoral support base in the last election, and I'm talking not local government election, we'll come to that just now, but I'm talking about the last national and provincial election. You saw three constituencies in Soweto, etc., where the ANC didn't do well. There was almost a sense of a protest vote against the ANC to say you haven't necessarily, you know, taken our interests into consideration. You just come out and you think that you can lip service and lip sync rhetoric to us and then don't do anything in terms of the service delivery, the kind of responsive nature that we need with our government and our governance and so forth. So people decided, okay, we're not going to vote for the ANC, or we're going to not come out to vote, and it's mainly ANC supporters that didn't come out to vote. So you saw this trajectory of electoral support swing in the province, where key constituencies actually either shifted their vote to opposition parties like the EFF, or they just didn't come out to vote because they didn't feel that the ANC took them seriously enough, but also they didn't feel that there was an alternative party to vote for in the electoral space. Then, of course, you had 2021 local government elections. And, of course, there you saw a major decline of the ANC in terms of coming in at a very, very, very marginal space in terms of its electoral support. And, of course, this is why you had a coalition emerge with the DA and the other political parties that went into a coalition agreement. And that coalition agreement is just coming up, I think, for 1 year old now. But that coalition was what brought DA into a governing party in the province, and in the, not in the province, rather in the Johannesburg Metro, in the council. And then, of course, we had this whole kind of pushback where the ANC now was very kind of upset about this, and they realized, okay, we're going to lose Nelson Mandela Bay and, of course, lose another metro. This is not good for us. So you saw this incredible dynamic of behind-the-scenes kind of negotiations and trading with smaller coalition partners, smaller political parties. And, of course, all of this is done in the context of not even thinking about the fact that you had voted for this party or yeah. voted for one party. And, of course, they go into a coalition and they all become about themselves, me, myself, and I, in that coalition, and then they end up in the situation where first they voted a motion of no confidence in the speaker, and then of course a motion of no confidence in the former mayor. And all of this comes on the back of what is the real kind of intention of this, of voting out the mayor in this context? What is the real issue that really is that driving this? Is it the motion of no confidence that was read out on Friday in the council meeting and the voting there? Is there something that whatever she has done, if she violated some of her duties and the office of her position. And of course, it's quite interesting because now you're beginning to realize that we're entering into this fragility of coalition politics where political parties can be swayed. And this morning, you know, I was talking to a few colleagues, they were saying that the political parties that supported this motion of no confidence in the Johannesburg Council are beginning to become a little bit more circumspect now and saying, we won't do that in Ekurhuleni because we realize that we have been used. Well, the point of it is, you know, it's not rocket science, it's that science to realize that if you hold a sway or if you have some leverage, there are going to be these dynamics where people are going, other parties are going to try and leverage that and try and say to, oh no, we're going to go, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that. And suddenly they realize they've been used in the process. So I think this is what it's really about, is how accountable are these coalitions to the citizenry and the electorate in those councils?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sarusha, you know, it's just ultimately it's such a pity when somebody starts off with so much promise and just doesn't deliver. I know that as a radio station, and I have spoken to other media platforms as well, where our former mayor, Mpho Phadlatsi, was just not available. She was just not accessible. You know, when Herbert Mashaba was mayor, it was one phone call and he was on the line. Every other mayor. But this mayor, I mean, even the mayor of Cape Town, do you know what I mean? One text and he's on the phone in 10 minutes. But she was just not available to the people. And whether it was the people around her, whether it was her herself, it's just such a pity. You know, it's always nice to see women doing well.
Yeah, and I think there's two sides to everything. You know, sure. I mean, obviously there's this issue as well. But the big question now is, what happens going forward in the council, in the metro? How much of this will be utilized to actually say, right, we are now going to move forward and we're going to take the citizens' interest, the electorate's interest into play here? Because I think at the end of the day, we are seeing a lot of vested interest in these coalition politics and these coalition arrangements. So you've got this other element in terms of you want stability in the coalition. You want to be actually having a level of stability in the coalition. Should we now think about how this gets traction or get some kind of legislated positioning in our electoral space to say that these coalitions cannot be fragile, they cannot be completely at the whim of coalition partners. There has to be something that protects the interests of the citizens, because at the end of the day, it is the vote of the citizen that brings these parties into the council, into the metro. And then once you have that, I think if I'm not mistaken, after the election last year in local government, there was this question about whether any of the parties have a coalition agreement principle document. And I think to a large extent, you want to see that, because in the event of what we see now transpiring and occurring in the case of the Joburg Metro and the council, the question is how do you actually bring this to the fore when political parties are campaigning for elections, campaigning and canvassing? They should actually talk about what will happen in the event of coalition negotiations and put that on the table in their election manifesto, because they need to also start being open and transparent and accountable to their electorate, to their voters, but also to the broader electorate, because not everybody votes for a particular party. You may vote, as you rightly point out, you vote for one party, they go into a coalition, do they take the mandate of the electorate with them? So they need to start thinking about how do they integrate this in terms of the accountability and having that transparency.
I think as consumers and as the citizenry of a country, I think we need to demand that. We shouldn't leave it up for them to come to that conclusion. We should be pushing for that, Sarusha.
Yeah, we should. I mean, you're quite right. But when you look at election manifestos, when you look at when parties are going now and they'll start campaigning very soon for 2024, some of them are already in campaign mode already. So the question is, when they're coming to those door-to-door campaigns or they're doing their election slide somewhere in the township or outside in the urban center or in the rural area, the question is, do we have enough civic education for the electorate and citizen participation to say, hang on, before you start sending me food parcels and T-shirts and all that regalia which is inconsequential to my life, I want you to tell me what is your position on coalition, etc. And I think this is where we, as you rightly point out, we should have that a level of pushing forward in the way that we want to hold our political parties and political parties across the spectrum accountable. But at the end of the day as well, I think there's also a fatigue in society of hearing the same kind of rhetoric, the lip service and the lip syncing of rhetoric, that we know that these people don't really believe what comes out of their mouth. And so at the end of the day, I think the question is, how do we regain that level of vibrancy in society to do what you're saying we need to do?
Sarusha Naidu, while our former mayor may have disappointed, you never do. Thank you so much for your time, and we will catch up with you soon. That's Sarusha Naidu. She's a senior research associate at the Institute for Global Dialogue.